today's episode of Talkin' Tom, we watched Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, a movie featuring Tom Hanks.
Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close is a 2011 drama film that exists and is a real thing and also kind of has Tom Hanks in it.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
Welcome back, Hanks Heads.
Wow, it's 2020.
Happy New Year.
It's definitely 2020 right now.
Wow, it's so different.
Incredible.
Now. I can't believe we made it.
Welcome back from London.
Thank you. Sorry.
Where you've been.
We gotta do this other thing first.
Oh, okay.
Welcome back, Hanks Heads.
Oh, yeah.
To another episode of Talkin' Tom, the Pod Hanks Tomcast, where we watch Tom Hanks movies and then we talk about them.
It's important. I'm glad we're sort of like a mullet.
What does that
You're
mean?
You're the business, I'm the party.
I feel like that is the opposite of how anyone
I know.
Has
just
ever,
in that
like,
moment, it looked that way. So.
Oh, but thank you.
I was trying to make my bad
No,
joke.
It's like nice. That was a great joke.
It's 2020. We're sweeping.
Oh my God, it's like Freaky Friday.
Yeah. We're here today to talk about the film Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close from 2011.
Whoa, 2011.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
So, okay, so much is happening right now. Daniel and I are recording a bunch of episodes because we haven't done that in a while, and
the holidays are...
Yeah, things are happening.
Passed, but they're happening right
but
now.
But it's the new year. We're in a deep, like, time warp right now, so...
Yes.
Hopefully, you know, things are the same.
Yeah.
But we did watch this movie, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which we're here to talk about today.
Yes.
We both watched it at separate times.
Yes.
And had you ever seen it before?
No.
Okay, I also hadn't seen it before. Definitely not. I mean, we talked about the Mr. Rogers movie being like not what we were expecting.
Yes.
I straight up had no expectations of this movie.
Yes.
It's so weird. What a weird movie. So it's based off of a book.
Yeah. A book by Jonathan Safran Foer, I believe you pronounce his name.
Sure.
Which I've read, he did another book that I forgot the name of that I read.
Okay.
But he's like a very renowned, known author.
Okay.
I think this book is praised.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I know a lot of people have read the book.
Yes, I have not either, but...
Now, it's kind of nice to go into a movie not knowing anything about it.
Yeah.
That's like a fun way to watch a film.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess no further...
Well,
why don't you summarize the movie?
This movie, it's about a child named Oscar Schell.
Uh-huh.
And he has parents, and their names are Thomas and Linda, played by Sandra Bullock and Tom Hanks.
Uh-huh.
Well, just to start, this is another film that tricks us.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks is in this movie for, spoiler, a few minutes. He has Asperger's. The boy does, and he's very close with his father, who sort of plays games with him and kind of is very involved in his life. And one of their big games is they have exploration missions, and he sets up one searching for New York's it was the lost sixth borough. This
yes.
idea that there used to be six, which makes Oscar have to go around and participate in the outside world, which he struggles with Asperger's. So sort of his dad's way to connect with him, but also to like help him sort of, it's like therapeutic. He sees it. And then, September 11th happens. Thanks. And Oscar's father, Tom Hanks, is in the World Trade Centers and dies. As the movie continues, we sort of flash back and we learn a little bit more about that day. As it goes forward, but we jump a year later and Oscar has collected all of these things from his dad into he's a kid in a mall, including the answering machine tape. I think it's just a full answering machine with the messages from that day on it. And while he's kind of perusing through that stuff, he knocks a blue vase off of a cabinet and shatters, and there's an envelope in the vase. And it has the word black on it, and there's a key in it. And he sort of thinks that is his dad's, like, was a part of the exploration things he used to do for him. Mm-hmm. And so he goes on a quest to find out who this person is, which he thinks is someone with the last name Black. Mm-hmm. And along the way, he meets a bunch of people like Viola Davis and Max von Sydow and Jeffrey Wright, and basically goes on this. I mean, it's not, I don't think the components of the thing are very important, but he basically meets a bunch of people and learns about trying to find who this person is, and kind of makes an impression on these people. And they learn about him, and they learn about sort of what has happened in the city in the last year. And ultimately, we learn that Oscar, when the attacks of 9/11 happened, Oscar was sent home from school. His mom was at work. We learn his dad was at the Trade Center for a, I think, a meeting. And his dad is calling home, trying to get a hold of Oscar, because he knows he'll be there. And Oscar, there were 6 phone calls, and he listens to them, and Oscar's too afraid to answer. So he is watching the TV, sees the tower collapse, and the phone cuts off. And he realizes that he's heard his father die and didn't talk to him. So he didn't get to have final words with his dad. So he takes the answering machine and hides it, and has never told his mother because he's afraid that she'll would be upset. And so basically, as the mystery kind of comes to a conclusion, we learn that Oscar's dad was never close with his father. His father left, and we learn that Max von Sydow was Tom Hanks's father, and his grandfather, and they've connected together. He's been kind of his, like, he watches over him. He's mute and doesn't speak. But ultimately, we learn that his mother has been looking at his material for this search and has also been doing the search. So she's been letting people know that he's coming to help him along. So she's gotten involved. And basically, he, through this search, finds out how to forgive himself and accept his father's death. And he writes letters to all the people that he met. And he gives his mom a scrapbook of his adventures with pop-ups and pull tags titled, believe it or not, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which are some of the impairments he suffers with Asperger's. Mm-hmm. And finally, he goes to a spot in Central Park that him and his dad used to go to, and under his favorite swing, he finds a message from his father congratulating him on finishing the thing, and it gives him closure. Mm-hmm. So it's one, it's kind of like an adventure movie drama thing.
A little boy searching for meaning in the aftermath of the loss of his father.
Yeah. Some dense subject matter.
Yeah, some pretty challenging stuff. I wonder if we've talked about this on the show. I actually, like, do not remember. Have we talked about 9/11 at all?
I don't think...
Like, what do you remember about 9/11?
I was 11 years old.
Okay.
In 6th grade, I believe.
Okay.
And we went to school as normal. I remember a friend telling me, like, oh yeah, something happened in New York, like from the bus. And to my recollection, I think school was cut short a little bit that day, and teachers were all very upset, and some of it was on TV, but it was kind of underplayed until we got home and our parents could talk to us about it.
Okay.
That's what I remember of it. I remember coming home, my mom was really upset, and I didn't really understand it, what was going on, because they didn't want to make us worry, but at the same time, like, we're worried. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any direct connection. No one that I knew personally at the time was affected. We didn't have family or anything in New York. So it was a strange event for an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
What about you?
I was 10, or I was 9. I was, like, about to turn 10. And the only thing I remember is that the only thing I cared about that day was that I had found out my teacher was going to be, like, a teacher I didn't like. And I just, like, was really bummed about that. And I remember, like, going to school and being like, did you guys hear? And they're like, yeah, we heard about it. And, like, everyone was acting, like, way too cool and, like, didn't want to talk about this, like, massive terrorist attack because we're all, like, fucking 9 and don't understand. And I was like, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about my teacher that I don't like. And it was just, like, a, you know, incredibly self-involved thing for a 9-year-old.
Yeah. It's a weird age to kind of go through something like that.
You just, like, straight up do not have the capacity. Yeah. But I had a teacher who had family from New York and was from New York, and she was I remember that. That, like, put it into a perspective for me. But kind of interesting to think about. I feel like I've seen the... I just read a book recently where the ending was a... There was a reveal that, like, it all happened in the events of 9/11. And it's like a storytelling device now.
Yeah, there's That's been a few movies that have done that. And they're very worse off for it.
Yeah.
Rather than... I'll just start it up front because I think it's important to how everything else I'm going to talk about is. I think this is a movie that believes or perhaps was advertised as a story about, like, post-traumatic stress and grief and, like, coming to terms with death. But I think this is a movie, as it was created, that is about manipulating emotion to win awards.
Interesting.
I did not like this movie.
Oh, okay.
I thought it uses its sort of... its sentimental, like, feverishly sentimental to, like, con you into believing... to, like, care. And, I don't know. It sort of uses... I mean, we have mental health issues in my family, and I always struggle with things about mental health in terms of especially stuff like Asperger's and stuff, which needs representation, but it's, when it's used as a device to make you, as like a quirk or to, I don't know, almost like a way to, I don't know, I'm trying to phrase it properly, but when mental health stuff is used as a device for manipulation for the audience, where you can immediately, they're like, you know, you're going to care about this guy. Oh, he does weird stuff and he's going to behave this way. But that's okay because that's how it is. And you have to understand what he's going through and you're going to really relate to him. But I don't feel that. I think it just feels like this, I don't know, there's, I'm trying to like go through my notes and make any sense of it. But
do they actually say in the movie that he has Asperger's or is that something we draw?
I don't remember.
I feel like they don't. But it's, like, very implied.
Yeah, I
and
can't,
probably more specific in the book.
It may have been... yeah, I don't... There's just... Whatever... If they don't say it, then whatever condition it is, I think is... It's just the way that the entire thing is told and used is... Uh-huh. is I mean, the characters that you meet, like his grandpa and stuff, like it's all set up to make you feel awful and then great and, like, as if you're on this mission with him. And the entire time, I just felt like they were stringing me along. And then at the end, I'd be like... And, you know, when you guys are watching for the Oscars, for your consideration, remember us. Like, we really hit you in the heart with this one, didn't we?
Right. And
it
when
just
that's...
felt so insincere.
Okay.
Which is weird. I haven't responded to something like that in a while, where I watched this and I was just, like, angry as I watched. And I just got angrier.
Angry.
As it went back. Because it would show... There's this recurring image of someone falling.
That's
his dad. That they bring up, and every time it is expert, not expertly, it is placed so that you feel awful. You feel like shit in that moment, and you sort of like, oh, I know, I understand. Like, he is just in so much grief, and I was like, there's no exploration of it. It is just all surface level to make me feel bad on a...
Interesting.
It was bugging me. It's like a hammer. I feel like they just hammered in everything they wanted to say. I don't even know if it's saying anything. It's just there on a surface to show us. But, like, what do we learn that isn't, like, spoken in a monologue?
Interesting.
It's like self-important is a good word I would use. It feels like it thinks it is a very important movie.
Okay.
As if it's presenting some universal brilliance and truth about how we cope with grief and how we move on from loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't find it. Personally,
I hear you. I'm surprised. I'm taken aback. I feel like there is like a level of insincerity when using something like one of our greatest national tragedies, like as a main plot point. Like, your movie's got to be like pretty fucking astounding for that to be like a fair thing to commodify. What am I thinking?
Commodify sounds right. Commodicize. Yeah, I think that's right. Sounds like a right word.
So I hear what you're saying. I don't know that this kid's specific experience that's fictional, right? This isn't like based on a true story that I'm aware of.
I don't think so. I didn't.
That it serves.
Research though. That's so mad.
For this having to take place during the events of September 11th, does it serve the story better than if it was any other kind of like tragedy of his father passing away?
No, I think that's where it started to rub me the way it did. This could be about someone, say someone with Asperger's who lost someone who they connected with that was important to them, and sort of these things that kind of connected them. But then adding 9/11 behind it just adds the immediate, here's how you're going to feel because we all lived through it. Here's immediately, you know you're going to feel awful. This mm-hmm. thing happened. Do you remember this thing happened? This person lived through this. It doesn't feel like we're learning. We're like sharing a story. It feels like we're watching like a series of events with this, you know, it always, my problem with it is it presents everything like it's a quirk almost, like these little things. And I mean, maybe I'm just uneducated, but it was so disingenuous to me.
Mm-hmm.
All there to find any like sympathy it could like pull from me, instead of just made me mad. I don't
know. Interesting.
Yeah,
I wonder. Okay. I remember I took a screenwriting class in college, and one of the things that the professor, like, we would write these scripts and then he would read them out loud and go over like why you shouldn't do this and why this worked and why this doesn't work and whatever. Somebody had submitted a script that the setting was on the moon, and then it was just like a regular story that took place like in space basically. Yeah. And he was like, okay, you can't just like write a story that takes place in space and then never utilize the atmosphere. Like, what's the point of having that extreme of a setting, or what's the point of having the events take place on September 11th rather than something else? Like, how does that further the story? So I hear what you're saying about, and the fact that this kid has whatever mental illness, it does seem to be pretty heavily implied that it's Asperger's. And I think in the book it is specifically said that it's Asperger's. Okay. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, so how does that further the story other than to just show like another layer of difficulty that this character has rather than... So I hear what you're saying. I don't think I definitely didn't have the same... I think I kind of fell for this thing hook, line, and sinker, if I'm being completely honest. I watched it and I was like, yeah, that would fucking suck. Like, I'm so lucky that I haven't experienced that kind of hardship. And I do empathize with this, like, this journey of like trying to find meaning and trying to find understanding in this like incredibly complex experience of like humanity. Like, that's like a universal feeling. And me trying to kind of understand like my own family, my own background, and my own history. I have that same like search. And I think I'm probably always going to have, actually, hopefully I figured it all out when I went to London, but maybe not.
I do think if I'm looking for a reason you would have it set here is you do have to have, there's a kid who's going around meeting strangers and who feel compelled to help him. And I guess if you're in the aftermath in a major city of something terrible, there is like a bit of unity, and knowing that he has whatever he's struggling with, maybe there's some sympathy of why we would believe these people would like
just open their homes up to a small boy.
Because especially in like the time period, I mean, even in the 2000s and I, like that wouldn't be believable. So I think having that there does maybe help that.
And then all of that, though, is explained by the mom just, like, showing up and being like, here's this thing. I mean, this all could have happened in a total bubble and the kid lost his dad in a car accident or something.
That's my second big issue, if it's fair to call it a second. I may have listed, like, 15. is Sandra Bullock's character. She's not a character until she has to be at the end. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly she's someone who's connecting in this way that I think could be affecting this idea of she found a way to connect with her son. But it's not telling. She's, like, helping him continue what the father did. Which is sort of interesting at some level, but she's just like not existent for, I mean, this movie's 2 hours and 9 minutes and she's there for like the last 15 kind of as a human.
And she's got that big scene in the middle where the mom and the kid are yelling at each other.
I forgot about that scene.
Well, it's like, I'm sure you have thoughts on it. I think it's, I remember I was watching this with a friend of mine, and there was like a few points where the kid is just like so astoundingly rude and like so like incredibly awful, which, I mean, I guess you could excuse and say, oh, he doesn't have like the social awareness to know that what he's saying is offensive and whatever. And I mean, seems convenient.
Yeah, I don't.
But I also don't have a lot of understanding of yikes. I hope I'm not like saying stuff that's offensive.
No, I think that's sort of the line we have to walk. Is there are complexities to what they're speaking about with mental illness that I think I'm uneducated to speak about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have family connection that in terms of I had experience and of family and friends who suffer from things, but it's also uniquely a person's own
mm-hmm.
thing. So this is not a thing on, I feel like we're talking in broad strokes. We're not talking about this, if it is Asperger's singularly, because it is different for everyone and how it is handled. But the way it is used in the story specifically, the quirks that we are shown in the story are all these sort of, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, I have words written that I'll just read really mean now.
Well, okay, I'm like fascinated that you've had such a response to this movie. So your core, the main issue for you is that you feel like you've been manipulated rather than
led. I haven't read the book. I've heard good things about the book. So there must be something different in the book that makes it work, perhaps because if it's in first person, maybe in the character's head. Okay. But the movie seems to be made from start to finish as a device to elicit an emotional response and then get nominated for Best Picture.
But isn't that something that so many other movies do?
I think, yeah, absolutely. And every year's Academy, you know, every year's awards are guilty of that. But I guess sometimes I'm a little more aware of it, and other times I'm not. And I still feel like I can sometimes tell when there's like heart and soul put into the production of it.
Mm.
And there's just like sort of a, not a slickness, but it's just so, it's such a base level to how it was made that I don't feel any of that. Like there are things you can do, but there's like these monologues and it's, I don't know, it feels unrealistic. I put superficial, it's idealistic, but like in an annoying way. It's sort of, so I wrote, I think I saw this on someone else's thing, patriotically self-centered.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a good
thing. Well, I think I'm understanding what you're saying, is that it all feels very performative. Like, none of it feels genuine. And, like, what kind of asshole is going to watch a movie about September 11th and be like, I didn't feel anything when I watched this movie. Like, it's like almost like you're the bad American if you don't feel anything about this movie, which is an unfair position to put your viewer in. Did this movie get nominated for any awards?
For Best Picture.
Shut up. It did. Oh, wow. Okay. So, I didn't think it was that good.
Oh, I didn't. And I looked it up because I didn't look daring. And then afterwards I was like, well, I'll see what was on it. And then sure enough, like my fears. And Max von Sydow got nominated for Supporting Actor, which...
The little boy?
The grandpa.
Oh, the grandpa.
And he's an actor I really like and has incredible stuff. And this is such an interesting thing because I think what he has to work with, he does well. But his entire character base is to... Cause it's pretty... I think it's fairly clear who he is from the get-go.
Yeah.
But... No, no, and I read... I was going through some people's writing on it, and a lot of people... We're commending the novel, but it's this very impressive and difficult novel about, someone wrote it's about history, human connection, family loss, grief, all seen through the eyes of an autistic boy. But the film shifts it to be about 9/11,
mm-hmm.
and make the tragedy be the backdrop to emphasize that this is about death and stuff.
Okay.
And that just feels... I don't know. Something about that hits me. That sort of hits me.
It's just, and I can imagine that in the novel there was probably a lot more time and space given to each of the interactions he had with the various people with the last name Black, who he's like searching for. I love a story with like a mystery like that.
Yeah.
That is like my kind of movie.
Yeah, the core of it
seems super great. Compelling.
So it almost makes me want to read the novel because people, my issues with the novel, people have said, or my issues with the movie, people have said, are not the issues of the novel. The novel's about the people.
Yeah.
And the event is there. That the event is there, but it is not about that. Whereas the movie, the screenplay of the movie, it's about that.
Yeah. I wonder, okay. So I'm struggling right now just as like Josie, because I normally try to go into a movie having my own thoughts and my own experiences, but as we're talking, I'm like starting to be like, yeah, I fucking agree with this. You know, like, I hear what he's saying. I also felt like this movie was so fake. And I'm trying to remember, how did I actually feel? I mean, there are certain things in the movie that were so convenient. Like, it's so convenient that, like, the grandpa ends up being like the dude he's going on all these adventures with, and it's like so convenient that the mom, who's like doing a pretty objectively bad job of like dealing with her own grief in the way of like healing with her son.
And those are moments that I want more of.
Right.
Like this woman struggling with a loss she had no control over. Like that's
very interesting.
There's the sad.
There's, and that's just like natural. But instead it's just like she sits by the door and like doesn't do anything.
Yeah, until you get the reveal later that she was involved and was like keeping him safe, basically. You're
but
like,
even then
happening?
She's never communicating with her kid. Yeah. Which is like bad. And the mom knew all along that the dad had been like leaving these messages, because the dad had there's 6 voicemails on the machine.
Yeah.
That basically are like a chronological fucking deep dive into this man's death.
Yeah.
That this kid is just like a bystander for, like an unwilling, like he's just sitting there and he's paralyzed in fear. But and he thinks that he's protecting his mom. Protecting his mom by not allowing her to listen to those voicemails, when she like kind of deep down knows that the dad has been making those phone calls because he spoke to the mom on her work line.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You think she would have like, I don't know. It just seems she didn't ever check the voicemails. He didn't replace the voice machine until that night, right?
Yeah, there's like the kind of details like that I can look over, but it is weird when you're like,
okay, see, that's like, the kind of shit that
people
I'm
like, no one noticed that happened.
Well, yeah, and like no one's like offering this little boy any sort of like. Also, I think in the book, the mom has like a new boyfriend.
Oh, really?
And that, so there's like a little bit more of a tumultuous relationship between the son and the mother, because the mom is like moving on in her own way.
Yeah.
And instead we just see her as like a pretty absent mother.
It's interesting that when I hear stuff that they've cut, I'm like, oh, that adds some dynamic to things. Mm-hmm. And
that's why at the end, the kid says something like, it's okay if you want to move on and like fall in love with someone else. He like says something to that effect to the mom.
Well, I hadn't looked. I was just checking now. It's...
Wait, why did the grandpa get a nomination?
I think it just...
I didn't think that was that good of a... Sorry, I'm sorry.
No, that's... I was reading about sort of the reception, and before the film's release, it was expected to be a major awards contender, because the director's 2 previous films, which were The Hours and The Reader, both got Best Picture nominations. Okay. Actually, I've seen neither of those. And then it came out and had a polarizing reception, and was ignored by most of the bigger awards. No Golden Globes, no British Academy Film Awards, no Critics Group Awards, Screen Actors Guild. And they thought it wasn't a major award contender. And then it got nominated for Best Picture. Now, this is the year after they made... went from 5 nominations to 10.
Or 8 or whatever it is.
9 or 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and it's rotten on Rotten Tomatoes. And someone wrote that... Not only the worst reviewed Best Picture nominee in the last 10 years, but easily the worst film of 2011. Okay, it's interesting. I should have looked before. I was curious how general reception had been, but it doesn't have great reviews from critics.
Mm.
But it has good reviews from, see, it's one of those things where it has pretty good reviews from people, though.
Well, yeah, because it kind of hits all the buttons.
Yeah, this is the exact type of thing that if this was on, if this was on TV, like, my mom would be like...
This is like a mom and dad movie, like, hardcore.
Not a bad thing.
No, of course. Mom and dad's deserve movies. 46
on Rotten Tomatoes, 61 audience. So better than I thought. Yeah, I guess I just couldn't figure out what it wanted from me. What the point was.
Okay. What other movies came out in 2011?
For that... Let's see. I guess it'd be the 2012... Oscar nominees, Best Picture. Let's take a gander.
Let's go.
So it was The Descendants, Alexander Payne, that George Clooney movie.
Yeah.
The Artist, which is what won, the black and white silent
right.
film.
With
this, War Horse, Spielberg.
Mm.
Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, Tree of Life, Hugo and the Help.
Oh, Hugo was the cartoon.
That was the kid, the clock tower.
Yeah.
It's actually a really good movie. So there's some soft stuff. Moneyball, Hugo, The Tree of Life is amazing. The Artist was great.
Interesting.
I mean, Extremely Loud did not win, but...
No, but it's...
It does stand out.
Well, to even get nominated, it does speak pretty highly of...
Yeah.
People's reception. Okay. So what about Tom Hanks specifically?
They're so... I mean, he does...
Oh, I keep bumping the table.
I think he does fine. There's not nothing special to it, to be honest. There's also not a lot there. Mm-mm. He's there to make... He's there to, like, see the connection with the kid for a few minutes and then to feel... off, then you listen to his voicemails and you feel awful.
Really sad. Yeah.
And he has a great voice for it. But there's not nothing, there's not anything I think about from the performance that really stands out to me.
No, and it's like kind of a bread and butter performance for Tom. He gets to play like a lovable dad who like loves his wife.
Well, it's just sort of this streak. It's kind of this, like his supporting role thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, it makes sense why they put him in there because you need someone that immediately establishes how you're supposed to feel. We've talked about that before where you need an actor like Tom Hanks whose mere presence kind of makes you feel something. So also in a way, a manipulation.
Yeah.
You need to immediately connect with this dad and this kid. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry if I just shit all over that.
No, I mean, like,
my opinion is, the first 10 minutes I was out, so I could not watch it objectively.
Interesting. I watched it on in the morning, and I felt like it was a relatively quick view. Like, even though the movie itself isn't like, it's not short. I don't know what the runtime is.
2 hours and 9 minutes.
Which is like kind of hefty, but I didn't feel like that. It felt like it was all going at a pretty good speed for me. I don't feel like any, well, I didn't feel it. I didn't bump on it the way that you did.
Yeah.
But I hear exactly what you're saying, and I can kind of like look back and be like, oh yeah.
What also makes, I mean, I think in the same way, if I just sat down and had this as like not a movie I paid attention to or was trying to talk about afterwards, like it completely functions as a heart. It feels like almost like a made for TV. Like I want to feel today.
But I do. The thing that you're saying about like, what am I supposed to get from this? Because that is, we've been so lucky that we've been able to see so many incredible movies that do have like a core lesson or like a core, like you're supposed to, whether you're supposed to or not, you walk out of those movies or walk away from those films being like, okay, I have more information about the human experience. I have more information about people and humans and like, I'm different now because I saw that.
Yeah.
And also there's like plenty of movies that don't do that. And they're just there to like make you laugh about people switching bodies or something.
Yeah.
Weird Freaky Friday theme today. like bullshit, like sex comedies, like Bachelor Party, just for example. So many movies that don't mean anything, but this one is a kind of an interesting middle ground where I did feel things while I was watching it, and it felt sad, and I like the idea of, like, a little kid coming to terms and, like, thinking what that would be like to be in that position and how difficult that would be. But it's all very, like, you know exactly what's going to be on that voice machine before, and we don't get the big reveal until the very end of the movie.
It treats it like a reveal when I think we know.
It's so obvious.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not, maybe it isn't supposed to be, like, a big reveal.
Maybe, yeah.
And same with the grandfather, it's like,
And coming from, since we talked about A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood before, which is similarly about grief and sort of a very different kind, but and so it's such a soft, calm, introspective look at things, all housed around characters and using a notable figure to elevate it, and then this is like the polar opposite, where it's sort of cold and uses like a major event that we all went through as its motivating like empathy machine.
Yeah. That we're all very like sensitive about and very coarse.
And I think it, in my opinion, it feels something that like people are going to rally around it and be like, yeah, we know how this felt. And like, we know people that went through these types of things. And then absolutely, like, those are stories that should be told. But something about the way this movie was made. And now I feel like I am inclined to read the novel because I need to know.
Well, and it takes something away from it that it's not a real story.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you should, there's like a wealth of stories with these specific experiences. Who needs this like contrived one?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something very similar in many other things. That who knows? I don't know. I didn't bump on it the way that you did, but I also didn't. It's not like I definitely don't think it would be something that I would watch again.
I should have not started with that because it just immediately sunk the.
No, it didn't. Yeah. I like that kind of stuff.
Oh, so we talk a lot about we agree on things and this and that, and then we all have like opinions of, you know, we're sort of like, yeah, this and this and this. So I was surprised by how this hit me.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't. That's all I got for that.
That's it for me too, man.
This may be my love. I gave it.
It's not even fair to like really rank this as like a Tom Hanks performance because he's so like non.
You got nothing wrong with it.
No,
in terms of his performance.
He did his job.
Yeah.
I'm sure the character. I mean, there's no depth. We've been spoiled too. We've watched a lot of pretty incredible Tom Hanks movies.
We're on a string of good stuff right now.
Yeah. So now that you've gotten that out of your system.
Yeah.
It's probably time for one of our beloved segments. Hey.
Hey, it's happening.
Oh, Kevin is freaking out in the bedroom right now.
Yeah, she heard that. Oof.
Okay, so this is just kind of a lighthearted little fun one. I guess recently there was on an episode of Jeopardy. You're familiar, the game
with
show?
With the Jeopardy.
Yeah, it's a beloved game show that's on every single night.
I believe
you. It's cool. There was a question where... They asked who... They showed a clip of Tom Hanks playing Mr. Rogers and asked who plays this guy, and no one could answer it. And so the tweet went viral that showed it. The tweet is from someone named @Marshlands on Twitter, and the caption is, "This is the most fucked up thing I've ever seen." And I guess they showed it to Tom on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and he wasn't happy with the contestants. This is kind of funny. We're getting some good Tom Hanks content now that it's promoting.
They should have sent them our podcast. We know all about Tom Hanks. They could have been edumacated.
Yeah, that would have been helpful for them in preparation for Jeopardy, to listen to all 40 episodes of our podcast.
Yeah. Well, 40 movie episodes is, you know, we got both.
At least 10 minisodes.
We got what you need.
Very funny. Okay, so what's next?
Up next
Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas.
Oh, baby.
Which, as a precursor, we talked about it last time. We recorded with Cloud Atlas last year in fall.
Yeah. No, in like spring.
Was it really?
I feel like it was,
I think it was
so
late
long.
Summer. Maybe it was August.
Who knows?
It was a while. And then we realized we needed to record this episode and hadn't. And then our schedules got out of control and we didn't. And then we did A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood first because it was still in theaters. And
we're playing catch up.
Yes, yeah, so it's a little bit odd. So when you listen to next time's next episode, it will feel slightly weird because we're going to talk about our summers.
Yeah, who even knows what we say in there, man.
But I think, as you mentioned in the last episode, it's perfect for the type of movie Cloud Atlas is to have it be a weird time warp.
Mm-hmm. And it's good. We're just going to keep hitting the same beat.
We should
just
pretend that we did it on purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we did. I enjoy fun. You know, last year, who knows?
Last year, crazy.
But yeah, Cloud Atlas.
All right. Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Well, Happy New Year, Daniel. Wait. No, whatever. Talk about it another time. That's it for today's episode. If you're interested in continuing the conversation, you can find us on our website, talkingtom.com. That's talking without the G.com. We got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, SoundCloud. All that stuff.
Unbelievable. Pod Hanks Tomcast.
Yeah, it's so clever.
That's our greatest contribution.
My name is Josie.
My name's Daniel.
Hey, thanks for listening.
You got it right this time.
Hell yeah.